we present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the Ninth Man. The Ninth Man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Max.
Sunday, June 14th, 1942. The Ninth Man was on his way to Washington. There had been some annoying moments on the train. Dressed in civilian clothes and traveling with passengers, consisting mainly of soldiers on the way to joining up with units for military service or returning from furlough, he had been subjected to many barbs aimed in his direction. Loud cracks about draft dodging and four Fs having all the luck. Down to the more basic blows, such as seducing wives, girlfriends, and daughters, and stealing the jobs of men who were fighting for their country. With nerve ends raw and practically stretched to breaking point, the temptation to wreak immediate havoc must have singed the hairs of an already itchy trigger finger as he affected a limp and hobbled off to another coach and less conspicuous position. Arriving back at my apartment in Nebraska Avenue that day, I had plenty of time to reflect on activities of another kind, like trying to live up to the fiction of merely being a weekend guest of Gay Cogswell's, when in actual fact, it was a lot more complicated. One of the people who would have to know some of the facts sometime was my father, whose total faith in the honesty and ability of his son needed a lot of living up to.
Dear Andrzej, my son, I'm fine. How are you? Fine too, I hope. I don't hear from you in a little while. The army keep you busy, I guess, huh? Now you will say, hey, don't you know there's a war on? I don't go to the mine for 3 weeks now. My back hurt a little bit, yeah. You can send $22 for doctor, huh? If this not possible, don't worry. I give him IOU, yeah? Be good boy and write your father. I show your letters to friends in town on White House paper. That's all for now. Deepest affection. Such love, Blachek.
Yeah, I know you, old man. How difficult you make it. When you say your back hurts, you're probably flat out in bed, going through sheer hell. Ah, but you are such a lovable, independent old soul. I never know just how much to send you. If I send you too much, you think I'm extravagant and refuse to cash the check. If I send you a small one, then, hell, it's on my conscience. It has to be just large enough to suit us both.
Why don't you write more often, Andrei? Why don't you write more often?
Dear Papa. Oh, hell, what do I say? What can I say? Another week like the last, initialing passes in the war room, shuffling memos and duty rosters Sergeant Huffman hands me, trying to look busy. It'd be so nice to be able to tell you about this week's upcoming trip to Hyde Park on the President's train, hobnobbing with all the British security brass who will be accompanying the Prime Minister. But that's all classified information. What else can I tell you about? Gay, blonde, sexy, a little plump like Mama, but with money running out of her ears. Would you understand about all that, Papa?
I would understand. I'm no prude, Andy. I have never interfered too much in your life.
Maybe the money part might interest you a little, Papa.
Mama and I have always said,
if you would only eat your beets,
keep your room tidy,
study harder at long division,
play harder in the high school basketball team,
be polite to the Rotary Club president. He has always taken such an interest in you, Andres. One day you could end up running the mine that your father's always worked in. You could be big one day.
If only Mama had lived, Papa. I guess I can understand why you've never tried to remarry. There have been opportunities. Miss Anna down at the local grocery store would welcome an excuse to call in and see you. 2 years after Mama's death, she took to dyeing your hair and prettying herself up. But I doubt if you ever even noticed it. It has never even occurred to you that you might marry again.
She has always been so proud of you, Andres. And your basketball really did help you. I'll never forget how Mr. Allenby took you under his wing.
Yeah, George T. Allenby, attorney at law, Trinidad, Colorado's most notable citizen.
Took a personal interest in the town and its deserving young men. A wonderful man.
After high school, he helped you go to the Colorado School of Mines instead of to the coal pits. He had faith in you. Knew you were capable of much higher things.
Hell, I'm sorry, Mr. Allenby. I worked like blazes at being an engineer, but higher mathematics is just not on. Trigonometry and long division are just beyond me. I feel I've let you down.
Never mind, Andy. I know you've worked hard. I guess not everyone is cut out to be a mining engineer. We'll switch to business administration. More ways than one of skinning a cat. Could be you'll end up owning the mine one day instead of planning tunnels for one. You've got it in you, boy.
He had faith in you. Even during the Depression, when you got your degree, he found you a job with retired General Roach's cardboard box manufacturing company.
Fine young man, Allenby, this Blazek of yours. Healthy, strong, good-looking, good-natured, willing to tackle anything. Boundless energy and enthusiasm. Did a splendid job for me. Hell, I'm sorry about the company folding up the way it did. I guess my old army buddies just couldn't keep me in contracts. Not their fault. Not mine either. Sometimes we old soldiers don't seem to fit into peacetime, I guess. Peace in our time. Hell, what nonsense. The way the Germans are kicking up, anybody can see there's a war coming up. Military. That's a career for a young man. Military. And I know just the man to get him started. General Horace Tucker. Our taskmaster, but knows what it's all about. Well, Tucker, how's my young man been doing?
Not a bad young man at all. Few faults, though. Took a bit of correcting. A lot of these strong, sporting, outdoor types don't realize some of the finer points of indoor living. Like how to dress. How to get the trouser crease in the right place. So many of them can never get it to look straight. Not a tie correctly. Cut all that together. Learn that shoes are not just things that you wear, but are there to reflect the light after a good shine. Well, glad to say, though, Roach, that young Lieutenant Blazek has been doing so well that I've had him promoted to captain. Well, it looks so good these days that I even send him out to escort spare ladies to all those important cocktail dinner parties in Washington.
That's when I first met her, Gay. Gay Cogswell, the handsome young widow lady whose beloved and influential husband had, while eating Tornado's Morateur, choked to death in her presence and that of 12 dinner guests nearly 2 years ago. That's when my good general decided she should be out in the mainstream once again among the bright people and lent me as her escort to a formal dinner at the Mayflower. I felt instinctively there was something unfathomable and electric between us. She had one of the most convenient headaches I've ever known and headed us back to Maryland in her 6-bedroom house. One way or another, we explored all of them before morning, except for the little one, Gay Linz, the sweet kid of whom I've grown very fond. That was just the beginning. Since then, I have kept my apartment in town, the place I accumulate my mail and my spare, immaculately pressed uniforms. But all weekends and evenings I've spent at Gay's, sometimes as Lord of the Manor when it was just the two of us. For better or for worse, I've often thought about what must have gone through General Tucker's mind and figure he did what he did for me with the best of intentions. I'm still not sure whether for his or my benefit. But he decided to retire to a fish hatchery in Iowa on a sizable military pension and send me to Fort Still, Oklahoma, instead of on active service, with high praise to a quartermaster general who was seeking a clean, mannerly young aide. Whatever the case, he might have looked back on the desirable lady and the young officer confined to a dreary Wichita Mountain artillery range with contempt. But the lady was anything else but content with the arrangement and used all her influence to pull me up into the mainstream of politics and move into the White House.
Well, there you are, lover boy. I guess I can never be sure what General Tucker had in mind for you. But if he ever keeps tabs on you, he'll be really proud of your working full time in the White House. A young man's got to have come a long way to do that.
Oh, sure, that's no lie, but I sometimes wonder if I did something to upset him. Did he have something against my going in active service? Or did he really feel I'd be of more use in Fort Still?
In some respects, he was a far-sighted man. Knew in his heart of hearts what was really good for you. For better or for worse, I think you've got a future in politics. And what you're doing is starting off on the right foot, particularly in these trying times.
Yeah, I guess the war is pretty young yet. I'm not ungrateful for what has happened as far as promotion is concerned, Papa. And I guess I have come quite a long way. But hell, I'd like you to meet the girl. I would love her to see where I grew up. But every time I broach the subject, there's always some excuse for her being unable to come, and I have to cancel the trip. I've begun to wonder lately if in some way she isn't a bit of a snob. But then, on the other hand, she's so warm, so open, and kind-hearted. Oh, hell. There's no way I can explain all the things I'd like to say in a letter, Papa. You'll have to wait until I can tell you in detail, personally. Just a note for now, I think. I hope this check will cover everything. I'll drop you a line soon when I've got something really interesting to report. There's quite a lot on the go that I'd like to tell you, but it will keep until a later stage. Your loving son, Andrzej. Well, that's it. Hello?
They've gone, lover. The coast is clear. Come on back. It'll be too dark for tennis anyway.
Yes, madam. Who is this? I fear you have the wrong number, madam.
You swine, Andy. Get out here quick. I can't tell you how much I miss the sight of that magnificent body of yours.
Gee, I don't know, lady. I'm all booked up this month with a nice widow woman out in Maryland. What did you say your name was?
This is Cinderella's wicked stepsister. And if you don't get out here quick, I'm going to spoil your good looks. I'm going to borrow her glass slipper and hit you right between the eyes.
Ah, now I think I place you. Blonde hair, a foul tongue on occasions, big mouth. Give me a few minutes, Goldilocks. I've got to drop some uniforms, the dry cleaners for the Hyde Park trip.
You don't have to go on that trip, Andy. You're doing it just to get even with me.
Now, that's not true. Although, I will admit, I'm getting a little tired of playing tennis with your house guests.
Well, no one's coming out next weekend. I promise, Andy.
Don't, Gay. You knew I'd be up at Hyde Park anyway, so why waste guests?
Hog. Okay, Andy. We'll keep it clean. Are you coming?
You bet. Tell that delightful cook and general factotum, Maddie, to take the night off and go play bingo. I feel like clattering around the kitchen. Maybe you will, but I'm wearing an apron. I always get spattered with grease when I cook.
By all means, lover. By all means. Look after that lovely body, beautiful.
I'll do that. I spent, as can be imagined, a very pleasant, trouble-free night. Quite the opposite of George Dash and Peter Berger, who at that stage had perhaps only the vaguest idea as to what was worrying his friend and colleague, who had been pacing the room for what must have seemed like hours on end. It had been a long, restless night for both of them.
What on earth's the matter with you, George? You've hardly said a word since breakfast. What is it? What's troubling you?
I may have to make a very difficult decision.
Well, what kind of decision? I said, what kind of decision? Oh, George, look, please, at least stop pacing the floor. Backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. You're driving me crazy.
Well, then go back to your own room, if it's getting on your nerves that much.
I won't go until you tell me what's troubling you.
I suppose I ought to tell someone. I may need some advice. It's a hell of a burden to carry by oneself. The thing is, we really screwed up. That damned Coast Guard kid, that changes everything. If they catch us, they'll kill us, you know. Have you thought about that?
Hank said they'd never find us in this city.
Well, what does he know? I ask you. Most of the time he talks off the top of his head. He's too rash. I tell you, these G-men really know their business. You know what they do to spies in wartime, and we're spies.
But we knew that before we came here, surely. Anyway, we're safe now, aren't we? Well, aren't we?
No, not as long as there are people who can identify us. Besides, those G-men have other ways to find us. They collect clues, fingerprints, little bits of glass and paint, clothing. They can learn almost anything just by running some tests. You read about it all the time.
They still wouldn't know where to look for us.
You think not? They only have to catch one of us, you know. That damned Hank. He's so damn careless. Or Richard. They'd make him tell about the rest of us. Then, suddenly, one night, when we're not expecting it, they step out of a dark doorway and grab us by the arm, and we've had it. From then on, we're dead men.
But we haven't hurt anyone, have we? Not yet?
No, not yet. But do you think that is going to make any difference?
How do they do it to spies? Do they shoot them or hang them?
They shoot them, I imagine. Hanging is for criminals. Well, hell, I don't know. Maybe they use the electric chair. What difference does it make? We end up just as dead.
Maybe we could just disappear, not do anything.
They'd probably still catch us eventually. Well, that Coast Guard kid saw my face. So did the station master. If he hadn't seen me on the beach, it might have made all the difference. We had terribly bad luck. We haven't got a chance. It's no good kidding ourselves.
What can we do?
I'm not sure. I've been thinking about it. It's been on my mind all night. However I look at it, I want to get one answer. Give up. Give ourselves up before they catch us. Surrender.
For the love of God, George, we can't do that. Giving up wouldn't make any difference. They'd kill us anyway. As far as they're concerned, we'd still be spies.
Not if we gave ourselves up before Hank does something crazy. We could say we didn't want to be spies. We could say we hate the Nazis and that's why we're giving ourselves up.
Well, what if they didn't believe us? Why should they?
They would have to believe us. At least we would have a chance. I'm sorry, Peter. I can't think of any other way. I've tried. Dear God, I've tried.
You've already made up your mind.
Not yet. But I have to decide soon. If we wait too long, they might catch up with us and arrest us. Then we lose the advantage. If only I knew it was best. What do you think we should do, Peter?
You're the leader. Ultimately, it will have to be your decision. You seem to have gone into it very thoroughly. What worries me is Corinne and Hank. I don't think they'll go along with it.
I have thought about that, too. Maybe they won't. Perhaps we may not even tell them.
All right. Suppose we don't tell them. What about the Florida team? Would you turn them in, too?
How can I turn them in? I don't even know where they are.
You have the handkerchief, George, with the mail addresses. Hop's uncle in Chicago and Curling's friend in New York.
Well, what about it?
I don't think you should tell them about the handkerchief. It looks just like an ordinary handkerchief. They'd never know. Really, George, they'd never know.
Yeah. All right, damn it, I won't tell about the handkerchief. To hell with the Florida team, they're on their own. I have a lot to think about. I want to do what is best. It'll give us the best chance.
Yeah.
Now look, Peter, when we meet Richard and Heinrich at Grant's tomb, I know it's going to be difficult for you, but we got to act as though nothing's happened while we're talking to them. Understand?
Yeah.
Can you do it?
Why, I can try. But you've got to promise not to make up your mind yet. Not until we talk more about it. You must promise that, George, please.
All right. Don't worry. Just play along with me. I'll give you my word. Just act confident when we meet them. Look at them in their loud jackets. I warned them to try and look a little less conspicuous. Won't they ever listen? I remember what I said.
Yeah, try my best.
You are almost an hour late. We were beginning to worry.
Worry? Why? Everything's fine, isn't it?
Well, yes, but... you seem to be in a good mood, eh? That's a change. You acted very funny yesterday.
Yeah, of course I did. I was nervous. We all were keyed up and tired. A good night's rest makes all the difference.
Good. That's good. That's better than yesterday.
Don't worry about me. I know what I'm doing. Did you and Richard have any trouble getting into an hotel room?
No, none at all. We're fine. And you?
Yeah, it went smoothly. I really don't see any point in our meeting daily like this. I'm going to set our next meeting for Tuesday. I don't think Curling and the boys can get here before then. There's a restaurant on West 52nd Street. It's called the Swiss Chalet. Shall we make it 7 o'clock?
Do they serve German food?
Yeah.
Good. Perhaps we can have dinner together, eh?
Sure, that's a good idea. We'll see you there.
Right.
Oh, Heinrich.
Yeah?
Nothing. Just buy some new clothes, will you?
Sure. In a couple of days.
Sure. In a couple of days. In a couple of days, the FBI may even have caught up with us. And you will have done everything you can to help them. With your loud mouth. And your loud clothes. And your stupidity.
That was episode 5 of The Ninth Man by John Lee. Adapted and directed for broadcasting in 25 parts by Victor Magazine. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.